Let go of everyday worries and find your calm with positive prayer from Silent Unity, the newest in voice-activated technology, available on any Alexa-enabled device like the Amazon Echo. Each prayer and meditation on positive prayer will help strengthen, guide, and comfort you. To enable it, just say, "Alexa, open positive prayer." You can ask for a specific prayer on topics like healing, prosperity, and comfort. Give it a try today.
Serving spiritual seekers around the world. Unity Online Radio.
Welcome to World Spirituality, exploring the unity within all cultures and faith traditions with Paul John Roach, minister of Unity Church of Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas. Discover the universal principles present in all the world's religions and take an incredible journey to new understanding. Now, here is your host, Paul John Roach.
So hello and welcome to World Spirituality on the Unity Online Radio Network. I'm your host, Paul John Roach, coming to you from Unity Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas. Today we explore the fascinating, idiosyncratic, and influential life of Native American healer, shaman, and lecturer Rolling Thunder. And joining me is co-author of two books on Rolling Thunder, The Voice of Rolling Thunder, and the focus of today's show, The Shamanic Powers of Rolling Thunder. Stanley Krippner is a longtime friend of Rolling Thunder. He's a professor of psychology at Saybrook University in California and past president of the Association for Humanistic Psychology, a distinguished author and lecturer. He has co-written this book with Rolling Thunder's grandson, Sidian Morningstar Jones. So it's a joy and a pleasure to welcome Dr. Stanley Krippner to today's show. Welcome, Stanley.
Well, thank you so much for such a gracious introduction. And it's always a pleasure to talk about my old friend Rolling Thunder. And thank you very much for mentioning both of the books that his grandson and I have written about him.
Yes, and I thoroughly enjoyed reading this second book. I haven't had the chance to read the first one yet, but look forward to doing so. Rolling Thunder had almost a mythic status, didn't he, especially among hippies and New Agers. And I guess Doug Boyd's book in the 70s accelerated this. I remember reading that book myself back in the day. And so he became this this mythical figure. Agreed?
Well, you're right, and he never really asked for it. It sort of happened accidentally because one of his sons went off to San Francisco to live in the Haight-Ashbury and find out what the hippies were all about. And it was his son who just happened to end up in the neighborhood with the Grateful Dead. And when he met the Grateful Dead, he was telling them about his father, Rolling Thunder, and they expressed an interest in meeting Rolling Thunder. And so it was actually one of Rolling Thunder's sons who made the connection inadvertently. And then when Rolling Thunder actually showed up, he sort of blew the members of the Grateful Dead away, and they kept inviting him back to gig after gig, concert after concert, not to be on the stage or anything like that, but just to hang out backstage.
Right. And, of course, you know, Bob Dylan famously had a review, didn't he, Rolling Thunder review. Though, you know, in usual Bob Dylan fashion, I think he denied that it was about the Rolling Thunder.
Bob Dylan really enjoyed the sunrise ceremonies that Rolling Thunder was famous in doing, and I went to several myself.
Right.
He would simply do a ceremony, usually outdoors in a beautiful area, usually lighting a fire and welcoming the sun, welcoming the new day. Something very simple, but I think that people appreciated the simplicity and how he was so intent on honoring nature and giving thanks for what nature has given us.
Yes, and that's something that goes right through the book, I think, is, like you say, his understanding of nature, right? He understood that we live in a non-local universe, right, as we talk about today, and so everything's connected, and you can tune in to the various aspects of nature, various creatures. You don't necessarily have to be present to them, but you can tune into their consciousness, their energy, right? And there's many stories you tell about calling in the coyotes and, you know, asking them to not attack the chickens of the ranch or whatever, forming a balance in nature with them, an agreement, a negotiation with them.
Well, you put it very, very well, and the incident that you refer to, of course, was one of the memorable times I was rolling thunder at his camp called Metatonti. It was a spiritual community that lasted for about 10 years. And one night he said, come and take a walk with me, and we went off to the very edge of his camp where the camp ended and the woods began. And he started to hoot and shout and make strange noises. And within a few minutes, there was a hoot coming back, and that's when a pack of coyote came out of the woods, and they conversed back and forth, hooting back and forth with each other. And then the coyotes went back into the woods, and I said, Rolling Thunder, what's that all about? And he said, well, we're renewing our pact. We're not going to bother them and hunt them and kill them, and they're not going to come in and raid our chicken house and eat our chickens. And that lasted. They didn't lose a single chicken during all of the time that the camp was in operation.
Huh. Interesting, isn't that? Yeah. So there's an intelligence within everything, isn't there? Like we say, a consciousness. We tend to think of non-human species as being, you know, inferior, but I think the Native American understanding is that they share the same intelligence that all living sentient beings have, right? And we can tune into that intelligence, and we can actually talk with these animals. I know there's stories of people living in indigenous societies who are in tune with the weather and know when a storm is coming, so they can, you know, make precautions and everything. And I think it's the same with Rolling Thunder, right? Hence his name. He was attuned to the weather, right? There's many stories of him seeming to bring storms, or at least to know when a storm was coming.
Yes, this is how he got his name. He was very much in tune and in touch with the weather. And in our book, The Shamanic Powers of Rolling Thunder, Larry Doss, who is a very well-known physician, tells the story about Rolling Thunder's visit to Dallas, Texas, and how one of the newspaper reporters wrote a very dismissive article about Rolling Thunder, sort of making fun at him. And Rolling Thunder called him and said, I'm leaving town now, but as soon as I leave town, you're going to find out if I have powers or not. And as soon as Rolling Thunder left town, there was a huge rainstorm and thunderstorm, which was very unusual for Texas at that time of year. And obviously, the newspaper reporter never put that in the paper, but let's hope he learned his lesson.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So, you know, you touch on that, you know, with his celebrity came those that, you know, were cynical or skeptical about any kind of leader, you know, and this is true with gurus and other people. Some people find, you know, controversy and difficulty with these people. And you mentioned in the book that Morning Thunder never had a pretense that he was anything more than just an ordinary person, right? He didn't set himself up to be a great guru or great leader, never called himself a shaman or whatever. But it was foisted upon him a little bit, wasn't it?
Well, you're absolutely right. Rolling Thunder was, in many, many ways, very, very modest. And his philosophy was, well, you know, actions speak louder than words. And so he basically stood on his record. People came forth and gave witness to how they had been healed by Rolling Thunder, how he had saved their lives or the lives of their children. And he didn't make a big announcement about this. He just acknowledged it. And somebody would say, oh, I hear that you saved the life of that family's daughter when the doctors had given up. And he said, well, it was not me. It was, you know, it was the Great Spirit and some good herbs and some good doctoring. And we pulled her through. So he was one who, in a very understated way, knew his powers, but he also knew his limits. He knew when he could not do something, and if he could not help a person, he told that person right off so that they would save their time and their money.
Yes. You know, one of the controversies that I've heard about, I think it's touched on in your book, but was he really Native American? You know, you mentioned that he is one part of his family, his mother was Caucasian, his dad was Native American, right? So, but he looks very Caucasian when you see him in photographs.
Well, you know, that was sort of an absurd claim. He had many, many detractors, and some detractors said he wasn't really Native American. He was just posing. Now that's been settled because his grandson, Sidney Morningstar, had a DNA test done. So the Native American genes show up in his test. And remember that his grandmother was probably more Native American than Rolling Thunder. And so all told, Sidian has about 25% Native American genes because Sidian's mother was, of course, the daughter of Rolling Thunder, but his father had very, very little Native American genetic background. And so the DNA test that was done with Sidian really settled that issue, and I don't think it's been brought up again in recent years.
Yeah, well, good. That's good to know because, you know, that's kind of pernicious, isn't it, in a way? Now, the other controversy was that, you know, he was sharing too much of the wisdom ways of Native Americans with non-Native Americans. And I interviewed somebody on my show a few months ago who was, a Native American leader in the local area here where I live. And he was a little circumspect, you know. He wanted to make sure he didn't share anything that he wasn't supposed to. So that is a strong element in that culture, isn't it? To not cast your pearls before swine, so to speak.
Well, I think that this is a legitimate controversy, and Rolling Thunder said that he'd be happy to doctor people and help people heal no matter what their ethnic background was. And he said, people criticize me and I'm helping out white people. Well, so what? They were probably Native Americans in some previous life.
Right.
So he just was an equal opportunity assistant to people who were in need of help. However, there were certain things he would not talk about. There were certain secrets that had been entrusted to him that he would not discuss. And so there was a part of the legacy that he kept very, very private and very, very guarded. and nobody would ask him or push him about that, or they would get a taste of his temper.
Right, yeah. I read in the book,
you know, you have to face the fact that when the Europeans came to North America, the indigenous people, the Indians, the First Nations, the Native Americans, shared a lot with them. They helped them to survive the winters. They showed them how to grow crops. They provided some of the vegetables and fruits that are now mainstream culture. They taught them how to use many, many herbs that were better than the medicines that were brought over from Europe. So the Native Americans were, shall we say, more generous than what they got in return. What they get in return, they got plagues and epidemics that killed off the majority of their population.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's genocide, really, isn't it, that we're talking about? You know, the systematic destruction. And fortunately, that was part of the, you know, the ethos of the time, the manifest destiny and all that of the states. And, you know, it dealt the death to the buffalo and to numerous other species. You know, they were decimated as well as Native American people. So, you know, it was a different time and a different time of desperation. I mean, we were talking about huge pollution, too, in the industrial cities. Just, you know, no understanding of holism, really. And it's thanks to, you know, certain enlightened Westerners like Emerson and Thoreau and Whitman and folks like that and John Muir who sort of began to shift the balance here. I mean, you know, make people aware that there's value in nature and value in native traditions, right? So that we have a much greater understanding today, I think, of that. But even so, right? Yeah, I think you probably agree. It's still an uphill battle for Native Americans in America today.
Well, it's still an uphill battle. Things are much better than they were when I first met Rolling Thunder, but
right.
Rolling Thunder was the first to point out that there were problems in the Native community. He never hid the fact, and he did what he could to fight the high rates of alcoholism, of family abuse, of different types of self-abuse and suicide rates, and much of that is still with us. And so the Native Americans not only deserve the help of other Americans, but there is a renaissance going on. They're helping to heal themselves. And you see that now in a very, very healthy arts movement in terms of literature, in terms of movies, in terms of television programs, in terms of dance and poetry. And I would say that the respect and the admiration for Native American ways of living and contributions is much higher than it has been since I first became interested in Native Americans half a century ago. And
right.
Rolling Thunder played his role. He wasn't the only one, of course, but he played a very important role in raising the consciousness of people about Native Americans. And when he had his camp, Metatanti, which means go in peace, people came to learn about Native American ways from many different ethnic groups, people of all ages, and even different nationalities. And he, as you say, he never called himself a shaman, but what he did mainly was to teach and hold classes and show them the Native American way of life, which was a natural way of life, which was living with nature instead of living off nature, and also going in peace. His wife, Spotted Fawn, was very good at solving community problems, bringing people together and helping them solve problems peacefully. And so for the years that his model community was in action, it really touched and affected probably a couple of thousand people. And it's sort of legendary today, just like the Camelot legend. And we have a whole section in our book, The Shamanic Powers of Rolling Thunder, about Metatanti and the people who went to Metatanti and learned things there.
Yeah, very good. All right, we're at the break. I'm with Stanley Krippner. We're talking about his book, The Shamanic Powers of Rolling Thunder. When we come back, we'll learn more about this famous shaman and teacher and healer. So join us again in 2 minutes after these messages from Unity.
Like to share the programs that inspire you most with audiences around the world? That's easier than ever with mobile giving. Just text Unity Radio to 72727 and help us continue offering spiritual programs that change lives.
If you've ever wondered how a specific Bible verse might be interpreted metaphysically, then Interpret This is for you. In Interpret This, Unity Minister Reverend Ed Townley answers your questions about the Bible and how to apply its verses to your life with passion, depth, and spiritual insight. To submit a question or to enjoy any of his numerous metaphysical interpretations, visit unity.org and click on the Interpret This box.
The world is full of voices, advertising, television, politics, colleagues, family, and friends. All are too happy to tell us how to live. In all of that noise, it's easy to miss the one voice that matters, your own soul. What would happen if you could hear that voice? Imagine the clarity, confidence, and courage that would be yours and the life you could create. Join Janet Connor, best-selling author of Writing Down Your Soul, The Lotus and the Lily, and Your Soul Wants Five Things, as she and her guests explore how to hear the call of the soul and create the soul-directed life. Live Thursday at 1 p.m. Central, only on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Go inside to find.
You've been listening to World Spirituality with host Reverend Paul John Roach. To learn more about Reverend Paul John Roach, visit his website, pauljohnroach.com. Or if you have questions, email him at pauljohnroach@yahoo.com. We now return to World Spirituality.
All right, welcome back to today's show. I'm with Stanley Krippner. We're talking about his book, co-authored, about the shamanic powers of Rolling Thunder, the celebrated healer from the 70s and 80s, died in the 90s. And these books that he's written, the one, The Shamanic Powers, and then the other one, The Voice of Rolling Thunder, are quite insightful into his life and what he was here to do, both for Native Americans and for anyone, really, who was interested in this transpersonal, transcultural way of living our lives. And, of course, this is a big thing in Native American spirituality, isn't it? This idea that we are part of the whole, right? We are part of the hoop of the world, if you like, and everything's connected. The spiritual God is not outside of ourselves in some transcendent otherness, but God is also deep within us as the great spirit interfusing everything that we are. And this is a hugely important understanding, I believe, and we share it in unity. Stanley, I'm assuming that you also resonate with that understanding.
Well, yes, I certainly do. And what you say about non-local phenomena certainly applies to Rolling Thunder. And in our book, we tell many, many stories. I'll share one of them with your audience that attests to how Rolling Thunder worked as a healer. He was in Virginia Beach, Virginia, visiting the Edgar Cayce Foundation. Some of your listeners will know who Edgar Cayce was, and the organization, the Association for Research and Enlightenment. And there were two mothers who had sons in the area who were so sick they couldn't go to school. And so Rolling Thunder agreed to see them, and he sent a friend of mine out to buy some raw steak. So there was a pretty large crowd of people, and the two boys were on cots. They were so weak they couldn't even stand up. They were in pretty bad shape. And he went to the first boy, and he took his eagle feather and passed the eagle feather over the boy and put the raw steak on the ground right beneath the boy's cot. And the people who were there said that a mist came out of the steak, and the mist took the form of a wolf. And the boy sat up in bed. Suddenly he had a lot of energy, and then the smoke disappeared, and the steak was nothing but charred ashes. And some weeks after that, the boy was back in school. That's the good news. Then Rolling Thunder went to the other boy, and the raw steak was under the cot, and he passed the eagle feather, and a little wisp came out of the steak, but not very much. And Rolling Thunder told my friend, you know, I can't do much for this boy because his mother is in the way. His mother says she wants the boy to be healed, but she knows that if he gets healed, he'll go back to school and she'll be left at home alone, and she cannot stand that. And so I really can't help him. And, of course, the boy did not get better. He did not go back to school. And so that shows how Rolling Thunder knew his limits. When somebody didn't want to be healed, or when somebody didn't want their child to be healed, that was something that he couldn't overcome. And this very sad story is an example of that. And again, this story sounds pretty dramatic, but it was dozens of people saw it. I hear from people even today, they remember that very well. It was written up in the newspaper at the time, and it's written up in our books now, so the story is there for people to read.
And I think the important thing here, too, is that, you know, I think Rolling Thunder said that, you know, he relied on people's willingness to receive healing, is what you just mentioned, too. It was a cooperative thing, and it wasn't like he was the great healer imposing healing on someone. He was allowing them, through their faith, through their understanding, to bring about their own healing, right? Because healing comes from within, and he understood that. I think it's the same way Jesus healed. You know, Jesus couldn't heal people in his own country, it said, because they knew him as a human being, as a child, you know, as the carpenter's son or whatever. And so they just didn't have faith that they couldn't allow him to be their channel to healing. But in other places where they trusted him, it invoked their healing power. And I think this is important, isn't it, that great healers allow they suspend our disbelief, if you like, so that we can believe that this is possible for us.
That's a very good example. And, you know, the old saying, the prophet is not honored in his own country.
Right,
that
exactly.
That applies to a certain extent to healing also.
Yes.
And Rolling Thunder always made a big issue about how he was just facilitating things. He was not doing the healing. It was the Great Spirit, and it was making a connection between the Great Spirit and the inner medicine man or the inner medicine woman of the person who is going to get healed. And he also drew upon the family for support, the community to support. So there was a whole galaxy of healers and powers that Rolling Thunder depended upon. And then the plants that he used, the herbs that he used, they had their own power. And he would ask always when he would go out and pick plants, he would ask permission for them to be picked and assist in his healing.
You know, I love that idea. I was on Richard Anderson was on my show last week, and he lives in England, and he's talking about you know, appreciating things and seeing the God or spirit in everything. You know, that it's in the simple things where God expresses most beautifully, and I think that willingness to see the sacred in everything is beautiful. You know, asking permission of the flowers or the plants or the animals, you know, to be on this planet with them, right? Instead of seeing that we're the crown of creation and we can just spoil everything that we want to and have no relationship. And I think the Native American understanding that property, you know, is a little strange. You know, how can you own the earth? And yet that's a very Western cultural thing, you know, based on property values and private property is uplifted and almost exalted in certain areas of certainly more of a Republican view than a Democrat view, but it's definitely a strong Western value, I think. But the truth is, we none of us own the planet we're on, do we? It's given it on loan. We are stewards of it. And I think Native Americans understand that very well.
They understand that very well. And ever since I knew Rolling Thunder, he would make a whole point about how people had to consider themselves as part of nature. And if they didn't, nature would give up on them. And he foresaw the climate crisis, the global warming, the way that land was turned into deserts, the way that the oceans are being polluted. And it was like he and other Native Americans were a voice in the wilderness for many, many years. And then people started to wake up, more so in other parts of the world than in the United States. But at least, you know, he has a good track record in terms of predicting some of the disasters that are taking place. Also, I'll tell you one interesting story about how closely he was aligned with nature. He was in Santa Cruz, California, for I think it was his 80th birthday party. And I went down to join him, and we had a wonderful time with Native American succotash and also buffalo meat. And he made a big point about how when you kill an animal, You have to promise the animal that the energy from that animal's flesh will be used for positive purposes. And we had drumming, we had singing. Somebody had a videotape that they showed. It was a very, very enjoyable day. And shortly after that birthday party, Rolling Thunder said to his group, you know, we've got to leave. Something very bad is going to happen. And they got in the van and off they went back to Nevada. And no sooner did they get back to Nevada, but Santa Cruz suffered what's called the Loma Prieta earthquake. Vast areas of the city were destroyed. And the shock also hit parts of San Francisco. And Rolling Thunder knew that something was happening, and he just had to get out of there. And sure enough, a few days after he got home, that earthquake happened.
Wow, interesting. Yeah. He loved women, didn't he? That's another thing that's mentioned in the book. He was he loved his wife, but he also indulged himself with other relationships.
Well, the book is actually devoting an entire chapter by one of his friends, actually the former girlfriend of his son, called He Really Liked the Girls. And Rolling Thunder always made a point about saying, yes, I'm not perfect, and one thing that I have to admit is that I really like women. And he said, I always tell my wife about the romances I'm having, and she gives me permission because she knows that part. That's part of my nature. So in that chapter, the author, O'Shana Fastwolf, does make the point that Rolling Thunder would not push. He would never have a romance with a woman against her will. But his reputation with women was legendary, including a couple of very high-profile movie stars who we don't even want to mention in the book because we don't want to get into trouble with their lawyers. So,
yeah.
So that's, you know, Rolling Thunder had many, many facets to him, and he said that that was just part of his nature, and it certainly was right up to the end.
Right. He was also an alcoholic, wasn't he? I think you mentioned he's a recovering alcoholic, but sometimes he still drank.
Yes, Rolling Thunder actually, when he was sick, he fell in love with his nurse, and that's who he spent the last years of his life with. She came out and took care of him at his home in Nevada. That was actually his third wife. I never knew his first wife. His second wife, of course, was written about in the book. And she was a very good friend of mine. And when she got cancer, she came to the Presidio Army Base Hospital in San Francisco. Those Native Americans were given free medical treatment. And I would go to the hospital, and I would use hypnosis to help her work her way through the pain. And Rolling Thunder was very, very appreciative of what I did for her. I just wish I could have done more. And I had an experience when I was in Mexico. I had a dream that Rolling Thunder's wife, Spotted Fawn, came to me and said, I'm saying goodbye to you because I will not see you on this earth anymore. And I got back, and that was the very night that she died.
Wow, interesting. Yeah, there's, of course, many dreams talked about in the book, right, and visions that come through. It's a powerful way of experiencing this other world, right, that can speak to us. Last couple of weeks ago, I had a dream where a Black Panther came to me, and I picked it up and carried it for a while, and I had to hold its paw in its mouth because I didn't want it to bite me or hurt me. But that was a powerful dream because, you know, panthers, they're immensely strong and independent. So for me to pick it up and carry it for a while across this landscape was mystifying to me a little bit when I woke up. I thought, what's that about? But I see that as an auspicious dream, and I know that many dreams like that have power, don't they?
Oh, yes, that's a very auspicious dream. Rolling Thunder would say that black panther would be one of your power animals, and
yeah.
That represents a part of nature and also part of yourself that you can derive strength from as well as wisdom, because plant panthers are very clever, they're very intelligent, and also they're very agile, they're very fast, and they have a lot going for them. So that was a pretty good dream that you had.
Yeah, because I've had some anxious dreams lately. I've got a lot of things I have to take care of. So I think that was coming also to say, you know, you have the capability, and like you say, the ability, the strength, and the quickness to deal with whatever it is you have to deal with. So yeah, and I think we can all our listeners can be aware of that. You know, that we can receive great inspiration through our dreams. The subconscious can teach us much about who we are. Stanley, in the book, there's a couple of fascinating chapters by a German man who lives, I think, in the States now, Jürgen Werner Kramer. And in one of the chapters, he talks about charisma, you know. And obviously, Rolling Thunder had a lot of charisma. I mean, the people talked about his penetrating gaze. Some of the photographs you see of him, you could pick up that he had a lot of personal power. Anyway, Jürgen talks about natural and inflated charisma. I think Roman Thunder had a lot of natural charisma, but there's such a thing as inflated charisma, right? That's where it's a strange psychology, isn't it? The audience sort of dumbs themselves down and lifts up the person who's receiving the adulation, and so they get a lot of inflated charisma, and you see it with gurus as well, and it's almost nothing the person could do about it. You know, they choose to lift you up, but it can be a handicap, I think, sometimes, yeah?
Well, you know, Jürgen Kramer spent a lot of time at Beth-A-Tonti. Actually, he was there longer than I was. And he did a number of sketches when he was at Beth-A-Tonti just for his own enjoyment. And I asked him if we could use some of his sketches in the book. And sure enough, those sketches, which nobody had ever seen, are now illustrations for each chapter heading in the book.
So, yes.
Uh-huh. Yeah, you never know. You never know when what you're going to do is going to get a wider audience. And this is what Rolling Thunder's grandson, Sidney Morningstar, is now doing. He has a Facebook website that some of your listeners should go to, mymythos.com, mymythos.com. And it's about a place where people can share their myths, they can share their stories, they can share their dreams. And just yesterday, he posted a beautiful painting that he had made, and the painting pulls together a lot of power animals. Power animals like eagles, like snakes, like panthers, like the one that you had in your dream, like leopards, like lizards. Sidian's power animal is the octopus. He has the octopus tattooed on his arm, as a matter of fact. And again, to participate in this dialogue, some of your listeners might like to go to Facebook and just go to mymythos, mymythos.com, and you will learn all about the way that people are sharing their power animals, their personal stories, and their dreams, in all done in the spirit of Rolling Thunder. So
yeah,
Rolling Thunder's legacy lives on after him. It's gone off in all sorts of new directions.
Yes, yeah. And, I think the message, as long as we understand that you know, the true legacy of Rolling Thunder is to look within oneself, right? To idolize him. He wouldn't want that. He'd want us
He would never want that, no.
Right, to explore your own magnificence, right? Your own capability, that we're all wonderful children of the divine, and then there's amazing qualities within us.
Yeah, Stanley, I want to ask. was all in favor of empowering people, especially empowering women and giving women their own power and their own place. He always made this big issue about how before the Europeans came, women had more power in the Native American communities than they did in the European communities.
And that, you know, we have this image, though, don't we, in the popularized myth of Native Americans. You know, we call them squaws and everything, and they're very much, you know, lesser beings, you know, always being used and abused and things like that. But I think there's many things in the popularized version of Indians that are, you know, wrong, basically, right? I remember when I was a kid, you know, until I was about 25, it was a very stereotypical image of Indians falling off horses, you know, because they got shot by the cavalry or the white hats. And then that seemed to shift, you know, when we had movies that brought us new understanding of Native Americans, when Dee Brown's book came out about, you know, Bury My Heart at Wounded Knee. There was a shift, wasn't there, in understanding, and Rolling Thunder was part of that shift, I think. To see that there's value in this tradition, and that the myths and stereotypes that we've learned about aren't necessarily true, you know. Now, of course, you can go to a sweat lodge pretty much anywhere, right? I know there's a number of sweat lodges in the community where I live, and you know, non-Native Americans find them very therapeutic as well. So this is good.
Well, you know, I had my first sweat lodge experience with Rolling Thunder during one of my very, very first visits to Nevada to see him. And it was a pretty incredible occasion because a friend of mine came along who was ill with a gastrointestinal problem, and she actually was a Hollywood actress, and none of the expensive Hollywood doctors had been able to help her out. And Rolling Thunder agreed to have a sweat lodge ceremony to help her out. And in his tradition, both women and men can join the sweat lodge. And what we did was to go into the sweat lodge, taking off all of our clothes so that we could sweat easily. And then Corrine, the patient, was right smack in the middle. And before we went in, and while we still had our clothes on, we did a snake dance to get all of our energy together in the form of a snake. And this is all told in the other book, by the way, The Voice of Rolling Thunder, so I'm not going to spend much time talking about it right now. But the whole point is that she recovered from her problem, and it didn't return for the rest of her life. So that was a long-term cure. Now, believe it or not, Sidney Morningstar had never been in a sweat lodge when I met him. So once I met him, I arranged for him to have his first sweat lodge experience, which we had in Phoenix, Arizona, where one of the people who knew Rolling Thunder very well, Michael Niels, had constructed a sweat lodge in his backyard. And I've been in many, many sweat lodges in that backyard, and that was all done in the spirit of Rolling Thunder. And so Sidney and Morningstar had a chance to have his first sweat lodge experience and came out of it refreshed and revitalized, and he could really see and appreciate the power of the sweat lodge. And, of course, Rolling Thunder used the sweat lodge as a purification device for many, many of the people that he was trying to help. He had a wonderful sweat lodge on his property. And I would say that the sweat lodge had a lot of curative value in terms of the sweating and the purification, but also it had a symbolic value in terms of people bonding with each other, people getting together, people going into the sweat lodge, having the prayers, having the songs, and sometimes even having drumming going on, and then coming out, sometimes turning on the hose and cooling them down, then going back in the sweat lodge again. And traditionally, you would go back and forth three times. And again, each tribe used the sweat lodge a little bit differently. But Rolling Thunder's custom was to do it three times, a cycle of three times. But also his custom was if one person left early, then the ceremony would end, because that would sort of break the bond. And all the times that I've been in a sweat lodge, nobody has ever left early, thank heavens. So we've always the whole cycle from beginning to end.
And we're almost at the end.
People have criticized Rolling Thunder for letting people in the sweat lodge who are not Native Americans, but that was his way of doing things. He was very eager to share Native American knowledge with anybody who was seeking and wanted to find it and wanted to be helped by it.
Stanley, we're almost at the end of the show, and I wanted to ask you the final question, and that is in terms of your own spiritual life and development. What qualities were instilled in you, arose in you as a result of your relationship with Rolling Thunder? What were some of the qualities that he imparted that you've used now over the years?
Well, I think that he certainly reinforced my love for nature. I was born on a farm in Wisconsin, so I was very close to nature in one form or another all of my life. But Rolling Thunder was the one that awakened me to the way that human beings were destroying their own planet. And you talk about the wisdom of animals. Well, animals have survived. Birds have survived. The poor bees are dying off because of the pesticides, and that's a shame. Insects will be here long after human beings are gone, because insects know how to adapt and change better than any other form of life. So Rolling Thunder really awakened me to what we can learn from nature and also what we can learn from our fellow animals. As he said, the brothers and sisters who walk on all fours, who swim in the oceans, who fly in the sky, and who slither on their bellies, those are all of our relations. So that was one thing I learned from him. Also, I really admired his way of resolving conflicts in a peaceful way, sticking up for your rights. And when the when a group of developers tried to destroy the pine nut trees, some of the Native Americans wanted to go on a campaign and shoot and kill them. And Rolling Thunder, no, that's not the peaceful way to do it. We're going to take a movie of them destroying the trees, and we're going to take that to Washington. And that's what they did. They took the movie to Washington. Those are years ago. Ted Kennedy took an interest in that. He went to Richard Nixon. Nixon issued an executive order stopping this from happening. And in the meantime, Rolling Thunder and his people had poured sand into the gas tanks of the bulldozers, and so the bulldozers couldn't even destroy any more of the trees. So I learned that sometimes you can solve problems peacefully, and that's much more effective than taking aggressive action. And then
right.
I think the third thing I learned was persistence. If you don't win the first time, you just get up, try again, and you persevere. And that's what Rolling Thunder did. He persevered, and he was a fighter for the entire span of his life.
That's wonderful. All right, let me tell you about next week's show, and then we'll wrap up, and I'll say goodbye to Stanley. Next week, Unity Minister Paul Tenaglia, and singer-songwriter, blogger, professor, and author Peter Boland join me. They're going to do a tag team to make sense of having an engaged spiritual life in the midst of our political and social world. So how do we stay spiritual and still be politically and socially active? That's the theme. But right now I want to thank Dr. Stanley Krippner so much for sharing honestly and openly about Rolling Thunder. It's been a fascinating show. Thank you, Stanley.
You are so welcome. Thank you for having me on the show. And thank you for telling your listeners about our new book, The Shamanic Powers of Rolling Thunder. And I can see that you're well prepared and you are putting some of the Native American wisdom to good use in your life as well.
All right. Thank you very much for that. And thanks for listening, folks. Take care now. Talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning in to World Spirituality with Reverend Paul John Roach. Join us every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Central to further examine the spiritual teachings and religious traditions of our world and to discover the universal truth principles present in all. World Spirituality, only on UnityOnlineRadio.org, the voice of an awakening world. This program is brought to you in part by Unity Church of Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas, celebrating the Christ Spirit in all people. Online at www.unityfortworth.org.
Spirit of Recovery is the place where spirituality and recovery meet, where we support your spiritual growth. Reverend Anna Schaus, Ph.D., interviews down-to-earth guests who share with you how they keep going and growing in recovery. Spirit of Recovery is the place to get practical tips and join in lively discussions on topics that matter to recovering people. This program welcomes everyone who wants to know more about recovery. Join Anna and her guests live every Tuesday at 4 p.m. Central Time on Spirit of Recovery, where we talk about what keeps you growing. Only on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Sometimes when we think we love someone, we're actually loving what we think the other person may be able to give us. Love at its highest level demands nothing in return. Love is much more than an emotion. It is an inner quality that sees good everywhere and in everybody. It insists that all is good, and by refusing to see anything but good, it tends to cause that quality to appear uppermost in itself and in other things. Ask yourself, what kind of love am I radiating? Do I love with no concern about what I'll receive in return? Make the choice to love unconditionally, purely for the sake of loving. You'll become a healing, harmonizing influence on everyone and everything in your world. This message has been brought to you by the Association of Unity Churches International. To find a Unity Church near you, visit www.unity.org.
When you truly understand the laws of the universe and live a life based on these profound and unwavering truths, then your dream life starts today. No more waiting, no more wandering. If you're ready to let go of the striving and move into the allowing, you're ready for Everyday Attraction on Unity Online Radio. We study the teaching of Abraham given to us by beautiful Esther Hicks, so we can release confusion for clarity, exchange struggle for serenity, and have the time of our lives today. Join host Ray Zander every Friday at noon Central Time, 10 a.m. Pacific, on Unity Online Radio for Everyday Attraction, where the law of attraction gets real.
Let go of everyday worries and find your calm with positive prayer from Silent Unity, the newest in voice-activated technology, available on any Alexa-enabled device like the Amazon Echo. Each prayer and meditation on positive prayer will help strengthen, guide, and comfort you. To enable it, just say, "Alexa, open positive prayer." You can ask for a specific prayer on topics like healing, prosperity, and comfort. Give it a try today.